Blog Talk Radio.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the breaks ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose.
Tomorrow's my Friday, and filming Falkir, more of it on Saturday. Woohoo! Bro, can you feel me? A horror season, Lisa. Woohoo! Can't wait. Anyway, before I bring a special guest on, I just want to give props to my brother, Crosby Tatum, one of my bros in the film industry, and I like to do a little sticking up for him. I don't know the whole situation, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to read off of Kickstarter about his fundraiser for Surprise, Surprise. And to let you know, when someone does a fundraiser, it's not panhandling. If somebody has to complain about someone panhandling, well, why don't you dish out the money and give it to the filmmakers? Maybe they won't have to try to get donations, because anybody that's an independent filmmaker, they mostly have to get the money out of their pockets. These people are not rich. They actually work jobs, raise families, and do other things. And mind you, Crosby also has been getting in shape and training in martial arts. So, you know, if anybody has to say something about Crosby Tarrant, what he's doing, he's not panhandling. He works very hard, and he's an underdog. And let me just say that Surprise, Surprise is worth the wait. And I'm pulling up Kickstarter, and this is exactly what Crosby, it says right here. Okay. And to my guest call, I will put you on a few minutes, but to me this is very important that I have to do for now. And on Kickstarter, you go there, and I'm going to read what it says. A college student tricks his womanizing best friend into dating internet girl to save his grades. It says, hello, everyone. My name is Crosby Tatum, and I am the co-producer, writer, director, and actor of Surprise, Surprise. Thank you for taking the time to check out our Kickstarter page. Please take a moment to learn about our effort to make a cinematic film and consider making a donation towards our project. The story. Surprise, Surprise is a romantic comedy about a socially underconfident college student, which is Crosby himself, who tricks his womanizing best friend, JoJo Holland, into switching identities to date a beautiful, charming internet girl, which is Amber Michelle, to save his grades and his scholarship. Cut from the mode of Cyrano de Bergerac, and in some ways the King's Speech, Van Wilder, and Napoleon Dynamite, Surprise, Surprise is a film that will bring high stakes, high rewards, and high hilarity into view while entertaining audiences worldwide on the misadventures of a young man trying to mask his faults with a lie that completely spirals out of control. They have a teaser trailer. How does Kickstarter work? People pledge any amount and choose a reward. So you are pledging money and receiving rewards. So it's not panhandling. It's not like they're asking, begging for money. And so at the end of our 30-day Kickstarter campaign, if the combined total of all pledges for our project meets our $2,500 goal, then the credit cards of those who pledge are charged and we receive the funds to make our film. If we don't meet our goal, then the money is not withdrawn from your account and no rewards are provided. If we exceed our $2,500 goal, then the extra funds will be used to make our movie even better. Aside from a 5% Kickstarter fee and a 3-5% Amazon credit card process fee, all funds raised will be used directly in the production of the film. The inspiration behind the film, and this is Crosby, it says, I found an interesting statistic online that suggests that over 85% of the world suffers from some form of lacking low self-esteem. When I first read that, it compelled me because that's at least 85% of the world that has dealt in fears. That's at least 85% of people in the world who suffer from issues dealing with their own confidence, with how they look, how they act in public, and how they feel inside and out. For myself growing up and to this day, it's always been a tough deal being around people more attractive than I. Oh, it's going to break my heart. Crosby's looking awesome. I mean, that just breaks my heart reading this, but it says to see random beautiful girls snooze over my friends like hot butter pancakes and me feeling underconfident, nervously trying to talk to the opposite sex with the fear of rejection, always hanging above my head, always seemed to get the best of me, and I would just stay silent while I would just brood over my emotions. Hence the reason why me and my partner choose to write, surprise, and tell an interesting perspective of my life. In the main character who's afraid to talk to women because he fears that women aren't attracted to him. Our hopes in this at our movie will help others who suffer from low self-esteem become more confident, more open, more sociable, and honest to those around them, and we hope that they can be themselves no matter who is around them. And it says about the goal. We're looking to raise $2,500 to help our productions. I hope that's right. I hope that's the right amount. It says secure talent and crew for production, secure equipment, rentals, purchases, permits, location, and food costs. We have some exciting rewards to offer you, including IMDb.com producer credits starting at $100, be included in our movie, even host a screening at your location at shows, cast, and crew. And it talks about the actors and stuff and other ways you can help. So you can go to Kickstarter, look up Surprise, Surprise, and it even says about what people are saying about the film. And I even put up here, if there were more people like Crosby, it might bring back better the sheer enjoyment of watching a film. And, yes, I posted that comment myself. So you can actually go there, and I wanted to give props to Crosby, who is very hardworking. So I indeed wanted to open up the show, you know, to give some props for Crosby Tatum. And I know, I believe in Triceptor Studios 100%. Even the day I come to work with Jackie Chan, even if I'm working with him in China, believe me, I am Triceptor Studios life. You better believe it out there. And radio land right there. Anyway, let's see if this is my caller, my special guest, Robin. Hold on. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Shelly.
Hi, who's this?
This is Robin.
Hey! Thank you so much for waiting. I just had to give some props to Crosby because there was a little something going on about his Kickstarter, and I was kind of, with what happened. They said something about him panhandling on the site or something. I don't know the whole thing, but I think you can agree with me that anybody doing independent films, you know, you're taking everything out of your own pocket. So you try to get donations and do these, you know, raise money for your film. So it's not really panhandling. You're trying to make, you know, tell a story in a film. And speaking of films, I think I know the reason why I brought you on here. But before we get to that, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, absolutely. I just wanted to comment on what you just said, actually, because you're not kidding. But there are websites out there that are set up so that you can really put all your effort into campaigning for donations and things like that for your production. It's Indiegogo, and it's fantastic. I've gone on there, you know, and it's all about the response from a grassroots kind of level about, you know, filmmakers who have these brilliant ideas and they really would love to get these movies made. And some of them, you know, they try and they max out their credit cards and it still isn't really going to be enough for what they had envisioned. And it's up to people, you know, generous people out there who can contribute whatever they can. And it's not panhandling at all. It's for the arts. And that is certainly one of the most noble things you can do, to donate to someone who does have a vision. And then you can say that you were part of it, you know. There's some amazing filmmakers out there. We know a lot of the same people in common, and they're doing some incredible things right here in Massachusetts and in, on the East Coast, and you know, Maine and Vermont, and really in this close knit. We all know each other, you know. We all support each other. But I myself, my name is Robert Rivas, and I'm an actor as well. So I like to be in closely connected with a lot of filmmakers and people like that, because, you know, if they have an idea, hey, maybe I can use Rob Rivas, and he'll come in and maybe play a small part or whatever, and that's just great. It's really what we love to do. But I wasn't going to sit around and wait, you know, until somebody did have that idea. So I started coming out with my own ideas for you know, your vehicles that I could put myself in, and small, short, you know, film. I'm a filmmaker myself, a documentary filmmaker, and as well as an actor, and things I direct and I produce it myself. I'm at the cable access here in Lowell, Massachusetts, LTC, which is the local access channel, and I've been working in local access TV for many years. I've always been interested in television production and broadcasting. In fact, and I studied acting in college. I went to Middlesex Community College here in Lowell for a little while, and you know, so I'm all interested in what other people are doing and what they can do. And like I said, Indiegogo is a website you can, you know, go on there and campaign for contributions, people to you know, do it. I had one idea, and this is something I always wanted to film, and I have many, many dreams and visions and ideas of especially of films, you know, that I'd love to make someday, but of course don't have the funds. But one was a live action Hugo Hercules adventure story. And Hugo Hercules is a cartoon strip character from like 1902. From the Chicago Sun-Times, and he was the template, really, that they modeled Superman after, and mm-hmm. Captain Marvel and things like that, and he's not very well known, but he is really the original comic book, you know, one with superhuman strength and can lift a car over his head and an elephant and things like that, and I wanted to use Indiegogo to generate funds for that. The first campaign wasn't very successful. Nobody really, but there's so many to choose from. There's so many out there to look for, and some are very worthwhile, and they have causes and really things like that. So, but I'm not giving up on that dream, by the way, Shelley. That is definitely in the future. But there's so many other things, and I know you do independent films. You're an actress as well, and you're also you do a lot of really great stunts and things like that, and you're known for your martial arts expertise, and that's why I can't wait to work with you one of these days, you know.
Yeah, I'm very excited, and I don't know when I'm allowed to talk about something. I figure you should bring it up, because since I've been so busy, I can't get back to Boston. I've been invited to do so many things, but since I'm dedicated to something and what takes up my time, and when you had agreed that you'd want to come up to Maine, like I said, I have Fridays and Sundays where, you know, if people want to do a scene, and there's a great spot, you know, for near my house, so it's like pretty close. And I saw her and I said, that would be great to do a fight scene on. And if you want, I mean, like, I'll, like, you know, let you talk about the film itself, what you want to do. And, of course, like myself, I have an idol that I want to work with, which is Jackie Chan. Now, in my, what I had said a long time ago, because I said, if people were ever to try to help me to get to work with Jackie Chan and help me, I said, someday I'm going to give back. And if there's someone that's in the same predicament of me, and if I can give back on my own way, I'd like to help them out. And I do know from the fact that you actually like Dan Aykroyd and you want to work with him. So I was like, you know what? You know, if there's a way I can help you out, I definitely would. And would you want to, you know, talk a little bit about that? I want to come out from your mouth here.
Absolutely, and thank you for bringing that up. You know, to be, you know, thought of in the same breath of Dan Aykroyd is really, you know, to have the name association there. Well, Dan Aykroyd is definitely one of, if not probably the greatest influence on my style, my comedic style, because I'm a comedian, of performing. I mean, he really set, you know, the bar of how, you know, silly and funny you can be on, like, that sketch comedy level. And I really adapted a lot of character traits and things that he's, you know, done in other roles, and kind of incorporated that into my own repertoire. And I've been fortunate enough to be a cast member on the Bob Show for the past 5 years, starting in like around 2007. You know, writing sketch comedy, performing, being a funny comedian doing slapstick. And yeah, Dan Aykroyd. I mean, to me, he is absolutely, you know, one of the, the greatest influence. But there are others. I mean, he's not the only one. But it would be a dream come true to work side by side with Dan Aykroyd in a film. I mean, I think, you know, that would be a dream come true for just about anybody, because he's so, I mean, that's probably an unrealistic dream, some would say. Not necessarily, but I mean, I think if, you know, if I'm an actor, you know, then I'm a very obscure actor. And I do, like, I don't work, you know, I've never been in a movie per se, you know, Hollywood movie or something like that, but local things. And I like working at the local level. So, you know, I think it's important to definitely have dreams and ambitions. And meeting and talking to Dan Aykroyd someday, you know, there's so many things that he's into that I would love to pick his brain about and just sit and have a conversation and rap session or whatever, because, you know, I mean, he knows a lot of stuff. I mean, he's a genius in certain areas. Like, he was in Ghostbusters, and that was really his intention to bring that to the big screen. But his family, I mean, the Aykroyds, his dad and his brother, Peter Aykroyd, and his dad, Peter Aykroyd, Sr., are really into, you know, spiritualism and ghosts and investigating paranormal phenomena and you know, detecting it and as far back and, you know, as far as his dad, you know, before he was even born, and brought him, you know, he gave him, his sons, that interest in, you know, strange, you know, occurrences, local things, legends, UFOs, and things like that. And so, you know, I'm definitely into that too. I mean, those are things that, you know, they can take up a lot of time of research on the internet and things like, because it's fascinating. I think everyone's curious about ghosts and UFOs and things. And but I've been investigating them myself. I've been kind of a ghostbuster or a paranormal investigator for many, many years. And there's a lot of local history, you know, in a lot of places, you know, very strange stories come around. And I've had my own experiences. I've had my own personal, you know, brushes with, encounters with the supernatural. And I don't know if I want to get it right into all that right now, but...
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Like, as soon as you talk, you're like me, one thing goes into the other. And
it does.
I think back with Dan Aykroyd.
Right.
The thing that I wanted to bring up, I didn't mean to interrupt you or anything,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I was, I think I spoke to you about it before because it was years ago. Now it's like, this is like, it's just to think about it, it's like, I was working on set of Celtics Pride, and the thing is,
right.
I actually sat next to Dan Aykroyd in a film, and it's kind of like, that to me was like, you know, I didn't think anything at the time, and it's kind of funny, it was like, you probably would have been in your glory, like, you know, sitting next to Dan Aykroyd, because I probably would have felt
right.
Like if I was sitting next, you know, I want to sit next to Jackie Chan, but it's
yeah.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? It's like everybody has their own thing, and I'm like, man, I wish I would have known you back then, because I was like, hey, dude, sit over here. I'm sitting
oh, right.
Right next to
yeah,
Dan
no,
Aykroyd.
I would have swapped places with you, because I wouldn't have just been sitting there starstruck, or you don't know what you're going to do in that situation, really, but there'd be so many things that I'd bring up, you know, that he would know about, you know, that I would talk to him. And someday, hopefully, I can get that chance. But I've met a lot of famous people, and the whole trick is, the key is not to be starstruck. And really, you know, they're just average people, they're just regular people that have extraordinary jobs and that they're, you know, really famous. In fact, there's one time that I just want to bring up. I met Adam West from Batman. And there was...
Wow, that's cool.
He's a great actor, and I've always admired him and his acting style. In fact, on the Bob Show, there's one character I played called Dr. David Thatcher, who is a molecular nanobiologist, and he's a scientist. And he, you know, it's on a show called Mutant Arizona. It's a sci-fi show, and you know, so I was doing really an Adam West kind of overblown, dramatic, campy, you know, guy swaying and, you know, at the hips and kind of, and they thought I was doing, you know, Captain Kirk impression. So they were ribbing me about that, but I was thinking of Adam West, and I got to meet him. And actually, I played a Batman parody called Batty Guy on the Bob Show, and then I got to meet Adam West. But there's the whole thing is, he was coming home. I'm not coming home. He was coming back to the hotel from a restaurant, going out to eat that night, and he was going up to the elevator in the lobby there in the hallway, and I didn't approach him. I was sitting at a you know, on a sofa in the lobby, and I saw him come in, and I didn't want to mob him. You know, I figured this guy's, he's just a regular guy. He's coming in. He probably gets mobbed everywhere he goes, you know, by fans, people who recognize him. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to respect him, take a step back. And, you know, so I didn't accost, you know, Adam West before he got on the elevator and try to get an autograph or, you know, try to strike up a conversation. I just said, no, he's a regular guy. Let him, you know, give him that peace. So that's what it's all about, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like you or me, you know. That's what they really are, and it's just that I tend to think the more you get into the entertainment business and acting and like other people, like stuntmen and stuff, it's like, you know, totally different, you know, with what I'm in. And you start talking to these people, and it just becomes normal. And people will be like, even though we just do indies, they've been asking me, you know, well, how do you get to do this? And it's not really hard. It's just you just step in front of a camera if you really think about it. I mean, there's so much acting going on. That's all you have to do. And speaking of acting, if you want to bring up something about your film, I don't know what you're willing to speak about, but, you know, about your way of how you think you might get of Dan Aykroyd's attention. If you want to talk about that, feel free. I don't know what's under wraps or what you can talk about.
Well, I see what you mean. You know, the thing about this movie that I had an idea to do about a year ago, actually, was that it was going to be kind of Airplane meets Evil Dead. And the idea was that there was going to be a lot of sight gags and slapstick comedy, you know, in with this kind of horror atmosphere, like a zombie, my own zombie, really, and as if Mel Brooks directed it. So to kind of almost get the attention of Mel Brooks, really, more than even Dan Aykroyd, because Mel Brooks was such, you know, a pioneer of that style of comedy and someone that I'm a tremendous fan of. And, you know, Mel Brooks, like Dracula Dead and Loving It with Leslie Nielsen, and the way that kind of, you know, type of parody is what I'm, you know, I really enjoy, the Abrams movies, or Zuckerm Abrams and Zucker, I think it is. And, you know, so Airplane, so it's, my movie is called Non-Evil Undead, Army of Darkishness, you know, and, yeah, it's a take off of the one where Bruce Campbell plays Ash, the guy with the chainsaw for an arm, and I'm playing Ash Can. He's kind of, you know, a goofy version of that. And just a lot of those Airplane type of sight gags in there. And just as if Mel Brooks directed it, kind of with that, you know, crazy, you know, a bunch of non sequiturs thrown in there. And it's just going to be a lot of fun, and I want it to be an adventure too. So I'll have lots of action and fight scenes and stunts, and I do my own stunts. And in fact, I am a orange belt in judo. I studied judo for several years out in California, and so we'll get in there and we'll, you know, make it look good.
Yeah,
and,
I'm sure we will. You know, I'm pretty sure.
It's like if we could put ourselves in. You know, and you're going to be in makeup, and there's going to be crazy monsters that I'm going to be fighting, and I have a chainsaw prosthetic for my own hand, and it's going to be crazy, and, you know, and, yeah, and there's going to be characters and creatures. It's like a Mark Twain Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. It's a time travel movie, and it's set in, you know, with knights and medieval, you know, sets and backdrops. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I have a cast that a dream cast in mind, with some people you've worked with before, and I'm not going to name any names, but I just want the best of the best, in this, because they're gonna love that somebody, you know, thought of them when they were writing the script, and hopefully I can get them. So we'll see. I'm gonna start filming it probably the beginning of next month. And there's so many, you know, shots to get. It's gonna take a lot of time to put the final, you know, version out there, but that's what I'm working on, a Sam Raimi parody, you know. His was the ultimate experience in grueling horror, and mine will be the ultimate experience in grueling comedy. And it'll be, there's going to be a lot of, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a lot of gags, and also,
yeah,
you know,
it sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, yeah. It's something that, you know, people will like to watch. It's just, you know, being silly and adventure and gags and, you know, puns and, you know, little things like that. But see, the thing about it is that I have to be get serious for a minute here, because I also work with the blind every week. I do a radio news broadcast where I read the newspaper, and it's for the Talking Information Center out of Marshfield, Massachusetts. I broadcast out of Lowell, at the Lowell Association for the Blind. And to me, that is important, because I feel like, you know, I'm giving back to maybe those that cannot see and get all those visual gags all the time, you know. They can go to a movie and they can get the story, you know. But sight is a blessing, and you know, so I do everything I can to help out people that may not also can also see or even hear. And that's why some of my clips that I've done in the past, I make sure they're closed captioned, you know, for the hearing impaired, so they can read what we're saying. And that's also very important to do in films. So if you're a filmmaker out there, you know, it takes a lot of time, but, you know, just get down what everyone's saying, get the script together, and put closed captioning to it. That's, you know.
Yeah, that's really something very, very positive. And how did you get into that? How did you get into that?
I volunteer my time. So I go in there on Monday and Tuesday from, it goes from 10 to noon. And, you know, we have a few newspaper there that's all volunteers, staff who comes in to read. And it's just like a normal radio kind of broadcasting facility that you could picture, with the headphones and the microphones and everything in the booth, and the control panel, the audio box and everything, and you just operate it, you know. You find out if it's just me that day, it's just me, you know. Or usually there's two of us, and you know, we kind of play volleyball with the stories back and forth, and it's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding, and you know, and plus you find out what's going on in the world, and hear about all this news. It can be depressing. I mean, there's not a lot of great, good news out there. There's a lot of, there's a lot of violence or, you know, things like that. But you have to talk about it. And like I said, it's just very rewarding. And I encourage anyone listening, you know, if there's any volunteer work that you could do any day a week, you know, that you could do, maybe on the weekends, I suggest you go do it, because you're going to be helping somebody else and also yourself, because it's, you know, it warms your heart, you know, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and do you ever think with what you're doing, you know, what you could actually do? And in the 80s, I mean, before TV, they had radio shows, and I actually was listening to this thing, I don't know if it was a college station, but they reenacted Empire Strikes Back.
You're kidding.
They did,
yeah,
it on a radio show, and I was like, you know, you gave me a good idea, and they can maybe, there's people like you, they could do acting on the radio, you know, like do shows or something, and that would be kind of something really great for people, you know, that can't see, and then they can get a feel for it. You can have special, like,
Or also shut-ins, people who can't get out too, that not necessarily blind, but they, you know, they tune in for the broadcast because they might be in for some other debilitating reason. So it's also important for that area. And you are absolutely right. I mean, it all comes full circle, because before TV, everyone just had radio anyway, and you had to use your imagination, and stories would come on, and they had science fiction, they had Buck Rogers, You know, it's like Star Wars or something. It's, you know, and you throw along with the adventure, and you could picture all the spaceships and everything, and it was your own version because it was your, you know, your mind taking you to those other worlds and everything. And that is positive. It is great. I'd love to get into that. And I've done some of that. And, you know, but absolutely.
Yeah, and it's something where, you know, I mean, there's things we could do to go beyond just like the internet and, you know, and TV and such, because from what, you know, TV nowadays, I've actually stopped getting TV for the past, I don't know how many years. I just totally
right.
gave up, and I refuse to pay hundreds of dollars for stuff that
oh, yeah.
I don't even want to bother watching.
So right.
now I've lost touch with what's actually on TV, so I watch, like, Netflix. And what would be a good idea is, like, it's too bad. I mean, they give you selections, right, I guess if you want cable or whatever they call it nowadays. And you get a whole bunch of, like, stations or whatever, you know, cable stations like HBO and stuff. It's too bad we couldn't pick the exact stations that we want to, like, watch. You know, if there's, like, a show on one station, like, say, for instance, you don't know, I don't know if it's still all called ABC or CBS and, you know, whatever Channel 56 and 38 is. Like, you know, all the stations that you want. It's too bad we couldn't pick our own package. And they price it that way instead of making us watch what the cable companies watch. And I, if you really think about it, they'd probably make a lot more money because if people get to pick and choose the stations they want, I mean,
right.
I think that would better suit each and every individual household, not like what we should be forced to watch. And say, for instance, like, you know, from what I'm hearing, too, on Netflix, they're having this thing, and I guess I found it out from my brother, a horror, when he was saying, like, a lot of indie filmmakers aren't going to be able to submit their stuff to Netflix, and it's, like, mostly all the big blockbuster films. And I'm like, there's a lot of filmmakers that do a lot of great job. Like, I don't know if you've heard of Kevin MacDonald, and he had a film called Beg, and it had Tony Moran, the original Mike Myers, which hopefully down the road, you know, with a little bit more of practice, I'm going to have actually Tony on my show. Like, there's a couple
okay.
of people that I'm actually going to have on my show. So it's like a film like that, Beg, you know, with Tony. And I mean, Tony scared the crap out of so many people for so many years. And you think a film like that would get on Netflix. Do you know what I'm saying? That's Tony Moran. I mean, that's,
right.
you know, father of all, like, serial killers practically. But, you know, I'm sitting there waiting. I kept in touch with Kevin MacDonald on the internet. And it's like, man, I want to see it so bad, but it's kind of like it played, I think, at film festivals. But, you know, getting back to Netflix, right, there was this really bad movie, and they were supposed to make fun of Twilight. I mean, I'm not a big Twilight fan anyway. I mean, I like my vampires who are nice and strong, like Blade, like Wesley Snipes, not like these little wimpy, you know, whatever. And I always mention it's not to do with the actors. It's just how I am, how for a film and such. So,
right.
you know,
right.
I was watching it, and I thought it was going to be a good film. So this film that got on Netflix where they says that, you know, they don't want to have any indie films on there, this looks like it was something made off of YouTube where people made off their camera phones. And I'm like,
yeah.
how the heck did this get on there? I don't understand that because it was the worst movie I've seen in the history of filmmaking. And I'm like, you know, I bet you and me, say, for instance, you know, we're given $1 million each. You're going to tell me we're not going to make a really great film? Even my brother, Hora, you give him $1 billion. Do you know how many films he could practically make with that? I mean,
yeah.
it's just insane.
Yeah,
so,
I do the same thing. I mean, yeah, I'm the same as you with TV. I'm discouraged. I'm disgusted by it. And I don't have all those channels. I just have basic cable, and you only get 24, 25 channels. And that's fine. I mean, I'm not interested in all the other ones, and I'd rather watch movies. So I, you know, I would get DVDs, and I have an extensive collection of VHS and DVDs. I like old movies and black and white era, 30s, 40s, a lot of serials, you know, all the great superhero serials from the 40s that people don't even really know existed. The kids back then, they had Batman, they had, you know, Flash Gordon, they had Superman, they had all these, you know, black and white superheroes and Captain Marvel, and I love those, and they're in like 15 chapters. So if I had Netflix, that's what I'd be watching. I don't have, I even have Netflix, but it is funny. I am on cable TV, on cable access, and there's a space reserved for cable access in the Comcast and the budget and everything. So I'm kind of against all the satellite and all these other channels. But yeah, I mean, so there's that. Also, to touch on what else you were saying about funding, since I am in cable access, you know, realm of broadcasting and, you know, producing shows for TV, what we can do in that world is you can get underwriting, and you can have a local business, for example, fund, you know, one of your projects, and in exchange, and cable access is non-commercial, so it's not like we can, you know, show, hey, why don't you go down to Sal's and have a sub? You know, you can't do that. But what you can do is you can, in exchange for some money that they give you for your budget, be it going into costumes, props, whatever, which is a big, you know, a big thing for, you know, somebody like me that doesn't have all the money in the world to spend on the production, that in exchange for, you know, saying from a generous, you know, donation by the establishment, and then you talk to the proprietor, and then it's kind of like a commercial without being really a commercial for them, because they do get, you know, notice like that locally. And so that's one of the things I'm working on now to fund our project, Non-Evil Undead Army of Darkishness, is to kind of court the local businesses, whether it's, you know, getting ideas through the Chamber of Commerce or whatever locally, but just, or somebody I know who may be, you know, in town, word of mouth, hey, go here, hey, go there, and who knows what can happen. They could substantially, you know, fund a project, so also be on the lookout for that. And it's not panhandling at all. It's underwriting. It's a very legitimate thing, and it's a tax write-off for them, and they're supporting the arts. They feel good about it, and especially if you have something in common with that business or whatever, you know, use your imagination, and so you're kind of giving them a help up, you know. Plus, you also can do advertising online for them at the same time, and do actual commercials and film those. So, you know, but you just can't show it on cable access, but you can show it on the internet, and in exchange for some money for your movie or your TV show, or whatever, you can get things done, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much work. Like, people don't really realize, like, they don't really, really, truly understand about independent filmmaking. Do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of something where when people mostly want to think of the Hollywood films. And to me, like, especially, it always comes back to, you know, acting. What I'm, you know, action, what I mean, it comes back to action, because I grew up on the Asian action films, and compared... Right. You know, if you put side by side the Asian action films to the Hollywood action films, I'm going to tell you straight out that the Asian action films will beat the Hollywood action films any day, because they're just crazy. I think a lot of Chinese guys are crazy in the action field. It's like, not to be offensive or anything, just seeing what they do, because they have the energy. They just have that crazy energy, like the EMC monkeys. And what the head monkey's in, he's actually was one of Jackie Chan's disciples. And if I had the money to finance a film, those are the guys that I would want in a film. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, if you get money, you can have people, and I could bring it. I mean, knowing a lot of stunt people, I can have whoever in the film and make a great action film, like Craziness. You know, all that crazy, the chase scenes with all the crazy automobiles and the sports cars and everything. Believe me, I could bring it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, and I definitely think you can bring it too.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, and it's all about the story. If it's in, you know, it's centered. At first, it starts in your imagination, but then you're proactive with it, and you put it down, whether it's on paper or, you know, your word processor or whatever, and you come out with a good script. And if so, what if it has a couple of, you know, explosions and chase scenes and action and people falling off towers, and you can do it. You can get it filmed, and people. The hardest problem with people who are non-union, and, you know, people in independent, is to get them all on the same schedule, to have them show up at the same time on the same day. You know, but you have to coordinate things and do a lot of planning, and it's all about the planning. And you know, you do your research, and you make it 100%. And yeah, and it's a lot of fun. You can get away with some pretty spectacular things, and I'm excited really about the future of what's you know what the potential is from, you know, just being in the independent filmmaking world around here, you know, in New England, because it is exciting, and we know a lot of people, like I said, we have friends who are in common, who you know, are great at gathering people together and finding everyone's sweet spot in their schedule to, you know, to all get together and really come out with terrific products. So, yeah, it's wonderful watching other people's who I admire. Who are doing amazing things right now, and also it makes you want to do something and get out there too, and just kind of, because I'm a big ham, I'm just a big show off.
Yeah, I can definitely pitch you, like, I think you've got a good sense of comedic timing, and I think we'd have great chemistry on set, because I have that improv experience of working in dance theaters, and you improv. But the thing is, a lot of people really get great scripts, you know, actors, but it's like when it comes to improv, I heard not a lot of actors can do that. They want to stick basically to the script, and I have so much improv experience. So when someone says, okay, do this, I'm not afraid to go ahead and just go with the flow, you know, not have to have a set thing. So with me, who knows what's going to happen when we work on set? I can just imagine. I was like, we're going to be like banging each other around, and I'm like, I can just imagine this, the hilarity on set when we get there. It's just going to be like one of those things, because talking with you on the phone, I just like had that thing where, you know, how you just know when you just know about people and you make that connection, it just feels cool. You know what I'm saying? It just has that magnetic connection. You're like, you know, those are the people that you want to keep working with on set, the people that you actually, like, blend with. And that's what you keep want to do. You find the people you can blend with, and it's something, like, even with Crosby, in the beginning of the show, I call him one of my little brothers, because I've worked with him for a few times, and no matter where I go in this world, I'll still consider myself part of his company, with this tricep, this studio, and working, you know, being with them. And, you know, it's like, if I have a great experience working on set, I never forget the person or the director, you know, whoever does the film. I mean, the stuff that I've done a few years ago, and they were great experience. They were great learning experience. And those are the things that I remember, and I still, even though it's been a couple years later, I still bring the same stuff up on my Facebook, because it was great times on set. And looking at your Facebook page, I was looking, who was it that you actually met? Larry, what was his name?
Larry Storch. Larry Storch. He is the funniest man, I think, in my opinion, who's ever lived, as far as a master comedian. And goes back from the vaudeville era of comedy. He played Corporal Agarn on F Troop back in the 60s, the black and white Civil War you know, slapstick parody. And he was also in the 1975 Ghostbusters kids show that came on. And a lot of people don't even know that existed. I used to watch it when I was a kid. Actually, my birthday is on Sunday. I'm going to be 41.
Whoa, so, happy birthday!
Thank you. Thank you very much. And just, you know, back in the 70s, I have vivid memories in 1975 of tuning in Saturday mornings and watching Larry Storch and Forrest Tucker as the Ghostbusters. And they were hilarious. It's, you know, it's that comedy that, you never, in the back of your mind, you say, this guy, he jumps off the TV screen, and you feel like you know him. You feel like he's your friend. And maybe I wish back then that I could meet Larry. And then the dream did come true. You know, I met him at a convention and, you know, got to be friends with his manager a little bit and got invited to New York. And I just came back from being the stage manager of a play, Love Letters, that Larry was in. You know, he's ingratiated me into that inner circle, and it's really been, you know, a dream come true, because, you know, he's a Ghostbuster, and, you know, he's this hilarious comedian, and he knows all the, you know, he used to know Tony Curtis, and he was good friends with him in the Navy, and they became actors together, and they were in movies, so he does all these impressions, and you know, he does hundreds of celebrity impressions, and it just to get to hang around with Larry and become Larry's friend, and you know, he can teach me so much and has taught me so many things about comedy that you know, I'll never forget, and it's just been such a blessing. And Larry, I try to, you know, he's, like I said, Aykroyd is a great influence, and also Larry Storch from when I was a little kid. I used to love the Ghostbusters. Even before I loved the Ghostbusters with Dan Aykroyd, I loved the Ghostbusters with Larry Storch. And I got to know him. I met him, and I see him once in a while, and he lives in New York. He is 89 years old, and he's still going along strong, and he's still hilarious. He's still got a great sense of humor, and he's still working, and he's still performing and doing all kinds of great stuff. He's a very dynamic performer and a very great actor. And seeing him in Love Letters was very, you know, it was a very serendipitous moment, because he's not known for drama. I mean, he's known for being this wacky, you know, broad comedy guy, lowbrow comedy. But this, he had to, you know, bring something that no one's ever seen him do before, and that was, you know, be a very serious, dramatic guy. Although there were some funny, you know, elements to the play, and a lot of funny, you know, he was very funny in it, and there were gags and jokes, but for the most part, it was very touching to see Larry and being this, you know, guy. And he was with Marie Wallace, who was on Dark Shadows, the vampire soap opera back in the 60s, and she mm-hmm. was tremendous, yeah. And getting to be the stage manager for them and hanging out in the green room was just an amazing dream as an actor, a dream come true, because they're heavyweights. And, you know, I think she was even in the recent Dark Shadows movie that just came out. I didn't see it, but because I don't like to watch a lot of recent, you know, ones. I'm not a big fan of the movies these days, but like I said, older movies are the ones that I go for. But Marie, I know she was, you know, a very, you know, and she brought tears. She actually started crying on stage at one point, and the audience just broke up. Yeah, I mean, because it's these two characters who haven't seen each other in years, but they once in a while they send love letters back and forth to each other, and it's just not, you know, the stage doesn't, they're not taking it all up. They're just sitting there reading these love letters, and it's very endearing. It's very touching, and I'm a big fan now. I'd never seen the play, but, you know, it takes two, you know, great actors to be these two characters in this play, and a few, you know, have done it before, a few teams. I can't recall offhand who's done it, but we went to New York, and they did it at the Actors Temple, and it's a synagogue right in Manhattan, and they have a stage in there, and, you know, it was just wild. It was really great seeing Larry. Like I said, 89, and Ghostbusters, wow, what a dream. What a dream to work with him, to know him, and, yeah, so it's really been fantastic, and I don't know what else to say about Larry, Shelley, because, you know... He's just such a great guy. I could talk for a million years about Larry. He's done voices on cartoons. He was Phineas J. Whoopi on Tennessee Tuxedo cartoons. And I think everyone remembers that. Yeah. And so we don't even know him, but we hear his voice and things. And he's a part of our life, and we don't even know it. So.
Yeah, I think I would. See, I get the feel and I hear the passion in your voice, and it's like, see, you understand. You're like a fellow person who, you know, human being that understands, like, how I feel as if I met Jackie. And it's like, that's that feeling. I can feel it. I know exactly what that is. And I was like, man, this is such a path. Like, it's just like, it seems like it's insane. And people just, like, that don't know me. And it's like, Jackie's this big international person, this big superstar known all over the world in so many countries, because his Facebook page has over 27 million people on it. And I'm sitting here going, you know, it's not impossible. And it's like, you just proved something there on the radio tonight. And I'm glad you were able to talk of this experience, because, you know, someone that you looked up to, like, in that atmosphere. And it's good that you talked about it, because people used to say to me years ago when I was around the most negative people, and I think it used to make me sick inside. And they says, well, you know, Jackie, you know, you'll never get to work with them and stuff. But here you are, as an example, Rob, you're sitting here, this is what you wanted, this is your circle, and it's coming to you. Do you know what I'm saying? You're working for it, you work for it every day, and that's something that's really special. Do you know what I mean? That's really, I'm glad you brought that up in the show and was able to share with us, because this is what I want to talk to people about. When you share, you know, you get to share this experience with the world to maybe hopefully inspire. I mean, maybe people like other people, maybe not like Larry and Dan Aykroyd, but you can inspire people.
Yeah, definitely, because dreams do come true. They do. And you have to be, you know, ready to accept the mission, so to speak. I mean, you have to really want it, and then, you know, and the universe knows. And the universe, you know, it rewards you and gives back to the. But you do have to be someone that, you know, it does work hard for it, because they'll recognize that and they'll say, hey, wow, he's, you know, he'll do, he or she, you know, is willing to go that extra mile to do something for somebody, and you'll get recognized for that. And it may not be, you know, overnight. It's not going to be overnight. But you will be noticed by the ones that you're, you know, striving for, because you're vibrating on the same wavelength as them. You're thinking the same way they think, and so you're going to cross paths with them. You're going to meet them eventually, and you're going to, you know, you're going to wind up maybe working for them or working with them, you know, and then your dreams will come true, and you look back on it, and you say, it really hasn't even hit me yet. But, yeah, I've been so blessed, and I'm so fortunate that I've met all these, you know, tremendous people that I've looked up to, and it is possible. So, yes, it is, you know. And there's good things coming in store for all of us, I think.
Yeah, and I do believe that. I really do. And it's like you're such an inspiration to be on the show tonight. And, I mean, is there anything, okay, first of all, you know, besides me asking how did you, you know, I mean, do you have, like, any people that you want to give a shout out to, and what other kind of projects are you able to talk about, and, you know, anything else coming up? I mean, any shout outs you want to give to anybody?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I want to say one thing to everyone out there is one of my all-time inspiration, and this will relate to that, to who I've worked with recently, who I work with, is Leo Gorcey. From the Bowery Boys, the Dead End Kids, the East Side Kids. Back in the 30s, he was in the Dead End Kids, and then he was in the East Side Kids in the 40s, and then in the 50s, he was in the Bowery Boys. And he started off as just a street punk in some really harsh melodramas about life in, you know, in the slums of New York in the late 30s, Depression era. And then he rose through the ranks to become the leader of his group, and they were, like I said, they started out as tough, streetwise almost thugs, punks, with bad attitudes, chips on their shoulders, but American boys who are not, don't really mean any harm, but get wind up in trouble, juvenile delinquency and everything, and social commentary about life in the United States back then, before the war, and then the war happened and everything, and patriotism swells, and they got involved in really, you know, dramatic things in patriotism, you know, role and for the, you know, serials that they did. And I got to meet his son, Leo Gorcey Jr., and I actually auditioned for a role to play his father, Leo Gorcey, in a major Hollywood motion picture, in a feature film. It has never been made because of, you know, the studios. I believe it's Warner Brothers right now owns all the Bowery Boys movies from the 50s. And there's kind of some dispute over the control of the project and the amount of maybe the money, you know, that would be. But Leo Gorcey Jr., he wrote an autobiography about life with his famous dad, the actor Leo Gorcey, who is not well known because today the name doesn't really ring too many bells. With some it might, but he was a B-movie actor. But, you know, some of his movies have been suppressed, because the comedy of the Bowery Boys really is the Rosetta Stone for a lot of comedy that comes out today. I mean, they just go back and they kind of redo old Bowery Boys movies. And if you look, a lot of even the titles they reuse and come out with movies today. I mean, you know, No Holds Barred, the one with Hulk Hogan, that was a Bowery Boys movie, and No Holds Barred back in the 50s. Yep, and Stand and Deliver was another title that they reused. So he did a lot of ones. back then, and you know, I kind of look like him. I'm the same height, 5'6", and you know, kind of got that look and dark hair and everything. And so I tried to develop an impersonation of Leo Gorcey myself, with the Brooklynese accent and kind of the malapropisms.
Brooklynese, I like that term, Brooklynese.
That he would, yeah. I mean, it's he was such a character and a funny and just iconic with the fedora pinned back and everything and hitting Hunts Hall over the head with that. And they were a comedy team. And so, you know, I tried to emulate that. So I got to meet his son and audition for that. And that was probably the height of so far of the pinnacle of what can be done. If you are a dedicated actor or something, you can get that audition. You know, you can find out about what's coming up. And you can try out for things, and it's about being outgoing. And you don't always get them, you know, and you can't be too really disappointed about it. I mean, it goes with the territory. It's part of the acting life, you know. And but the other thing is I like working at the local level. I like being in non-union, non-Screen Actors Guild movies because and I don't necessarily know if I want to be you know, a huge, tremendous superstar and you know, rich and famous. Because, let me tell you why. Because, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, Shelley. You know, and once you get there, you're gonna lose something, and that's anonymity. Everyone's gonna think they know you. Everyone's gonna know who you are, and they might be curious about your personal privacy and what goes on in your private life, and that's no good. You know, so you're gonna give that up. And just in exchange for what, riches and fame. And fame's not all that great. I mean, talk to a famous person. They may not, you know, always like it. There's a lot of stalkers out there, and there's a lot of people that want to, you know, they want a piece of you, you know. And so I always wonder if that's really, you know, what I want because...
Well, that's when you got to move away to your own island. No, seriously. Another thing, too, and I tell women all the time, is they should learn self-defense. And, you know, kind of it's something where that they should. It's things that I've learned a little bit in martial arts, and it's something where if you're going to put yourself out in the public, I mean, there's certain things that I don't talk about on my Facebook and stuff like that, but, you know, certain things I use Facebook as a tool about, you know, acting and promoting and, you know, trying to help promote other people, you know, and bring you on the air like yourself and help other people to give them a chance to speak about their dreams. But the thing is, too, and I think people seem to be more grounded that are actors, that are stuntmen, anybody that has to do with martial arts, any trainers, you know, they train in anything whatsoever, it seems like they're more grounded because if you really think about it, I mean, come on, everything does relate once again back to Jackie Chan. Now, he has more money than God, right? He has all this money, right? But he's very down to earth. Yeah, he's like, he doesn't have to do anything, but Jackie, he gives back so much. And, of course, I mean, I know I'm a Jackie fanatic. I want to work with him and stuff. But following his whole career, what he does, every time there's a disaster, Jackie's there. He's helped bring water to people. He's done Operation Smiles, build a school foundation by donating dollars and stuff. It's like to have...
Right.
Yeah, he does all these things for charity work. Now, Jackie doesn't have to do that. He could just sit back with all his money and everything, but he does these so many. I can't even count the charity foundation things Jackie's done. He's a Goodwill ambassador, and it's stuff that I'm working my way to. It's like to talk about peace and defeat, you know, talk about peace and, you know, social issues that really matter because what I believe. Yeah. People blame, on my show, I'm not going to talk about two things. It's politics and sexual orientation. But the thing is, as people ourselves, I've learned, because I've done charity work and such like that, you sometimes, I mean, you try to do the best you can with things things that I've worked with, like the Asthma Foundation, breast cancer, Walk for AIDS, Walk for Hunger. I mean, these things, donating blood. But I tend to see, when you have a bigger voice, it's just like what Stan Lee says, you know, with... great power that comes great responsibility. So what I want to do is, like, I even tried to do this thing with the United Nations. Like, I wanted to become, like, a Goodwill Peace Ambassador. But I think the problem is my voice is not big enough yet to be able to do those things because I know us as people, we got to stop blaming the president. We got to stop blaming the politicians because I really I just don't believe any politician is going to help the human race. I think us as people, we have to do things ourselves. We have to step up to the plate, stop blaming everybody else, and do what we got to do. So as I get a bigger voice, I'm going to start doing more. Like, one of the things I want to do is help eradicate the gas chambers in the animal shelters. Do you see what I'm saying? Those are things that I'm looking into, you know, to try to help save animals, you know, with things with the homeless. I mean, those are things that matter to me. And it's like, there's so many kids out there, you know, in many different places. And even in our own backyard here in America, there's people that are homeless, that are, you know, hungry. And there's so many things that I could be doing more, you know, the bigger voice you have, people are going to come and listen to you, and they'll donate money. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm trying as best as I can. And I think, too, the other thing is, which you do train in, you know, you've trained in martial arts, but because in my surrounding, there's tons of stunt people, and even Z, my teacher, Ohora, I think it's something where they'll teach me to keep my feet on the ground. Like, the, everybody's preparing me for the bigger picture. So it's something like, we're blessed because we know about that martial arts way that's going to keep our, you know, our head on our shoulders, not to get that big. No matter how big of a voice we have, it's going to keep us level-headed to prepare for that time where, I mean, anything, anybody, so, say for instance you do something, right, and it does blow up. You know, you're going to get some recognition and people are going to see it. Because once you get into acting, whether it's independent film, I mean, look at that crazy film, Blair Witch Project. That blew up for a while, and that was the stupidest film in the history of filmmaking. But at the time, you know, so many people talked about it, and it's kind of like, you know, you have to be ready for that. I mean, anybody has a chance good enough as anybody else. So you're going to be in that limelight, but how you handle it, that's the thing. You have to be prepared before you get there. Do you know what I'm saying? It can happen to anyone. You know, it's just like one of those things, the luck of the draw probably, but actually it's hard work, you know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because they'll hand anyone, you know, and they'll thrust them into the limelight, and they may not have the talent, but also they have the connections, but they also might not have the internal fortitude to know exactly the right way to go about living their life if they get all this money and then they turn in, you know, to the side of drugs or, you know, something or you know, like racing fast cars or dangerous pursuits or things like that. And the idea is to be grounded. And I think you do learn that in martial arts. And you learn that, you know, and martial arts are great, and they're a great positive thing for life. And, you know, I highly advocate anyone, you know, pursuing that because it's positive for you physically and also mentally and spiritually. And you just, you know, you come to know your role as a human being a lot better. I mean, martial arts are fascinating. I don't know if you know the history of martial arts, but supposedly, and this is one of those weird avenues of stories that's going to branch off into a weird dimension, maybe. But
okay, go ahead, shoot.
Everyone knows about ninjas, you know, and I don't think glorifying ninjas is really that good because ninjas are assassins, and really that's what they do. They kill people, and that's really their main job. But they do it stealthily, and they do it, and they dress all in black, and they're undetected. I mean, they have a lot of weapons, but in Japanese, you know, mythology, the ninjas, the original ninjas, why they cover their face, their nose, and their mouth with that black, that extra piece of material, is in order to emulate the Tengu, which were these creatures that lived in the mountains in Japan, like in Mount Kyoto, and they were aliens. They were extraterrestrials, and they were bird-like, and they had bird beaks. And the way the ninja wear that black piece of material over their nose and mouth is to emulate the Tengu and to be more Tengu-like. And the Tengu were, you know, they used to teach human beings the martial arts up in the mountains. And so that's an old story. Actually, the name Tengu comes from Tianku, which is a Chinese word, which means the dog star. And what they saw overhead was like a shooting star, or really a falling star, and it had a tail on it, and that's why they call it Tianku, because the tail of the comet or whatever it was that crashed to Earth, you know, looked like the tail of a dog, so they called it the dog star. And the dog star, that's something else, but that's Sirius. But But Tengu, it became Tengu in Japanese. So they would teach the you know, the martial arts to those that, you know, that came into their domain in the woods. But they also had, they were kind of like playful, mischievous also spirits, and they kind of supposedly haunted the woods, they call it. So it's interesting Japanese kind of mythology there too that incorporates into that, but martial arts, you know, history, but and specifically the ninjas. But I just thought I'd bring that up.
I was like, I don't know, I've ever heard of that. I knew they were like assassins, but it was something. You know, I learned that they trained to be like spies and assassins, but
right.
I don't know. I heard they were like clans and everything. But
yes.
As far as, I mean, that's the first time. I'll just have to bring that up because I don't know. I never heard of that, you know, about like a bird thing, what you were talking about. I've never really heard that. I mean, I heard that with the different clans and everything. I mean, it probably is somewhere, but that's the first time that I ever really heard of something like that, what to do with ninjas. I mean, I know you're you're saying about people talking about them kind of cool and stuff, but, you know, with today's, you know, films and stuff, a ninja, you know, some, there's actually good ninja, like, of course, with G.I. Joe, you know, you know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. And there are.
Who's,
you know, no, I'm not saying that they're bad. They're actually, no, they did, they serve their purpose. I mean, they, without them, you know, history would be a lot different. And, but yeah, it's fascinating. We can find out. There was this a samurai, Yoshitsune, and he was like a folk hero in Japan. And there were so many, you know, stories about his life, and one that he encountered the Tengu, and they taught him you know, martial arts and things like that. And yeah, there's ghost stories and everything in Japan, and dragons, and a lot of mythology. It's really rich, and I definitely study it. In fact, when I was in South America back in 2006, I saw evidence of Tengu masks in Peru as part of the Peruvian culture. And so that definitely signified to me that there had been some, you know, there had been some Japanese or Asian Chinese influence, that maybe they came over in boats long ago and helped to, you know, became part of that country and that South American kind of mythology there too, and they brought their own mythology because it's very close. It's very similar. A lot of the artwork is the same, but these masks, there's no mistake about it, because masks have hair like mustaches in them, and very elaborate, and they have giant noses. That's another feature of Jobo. He's like the master Tengu of all the other ones, the bird-like ones, but he's not bird-like himself, and he's got this big nose, and you can even see that in Peru. So I'm gonna highlight that in another documentary somewhere down the line, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating. So there is that influence really all over from Asia.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're always kind of cool, because when I was a little girl, I never, you know, as you're a kid, you're just looking at movies as a ninja kind of cool. You don't think of, like, going around killing people, but it's more basically you're thinking of the martial arts and being really cool ninjas and stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, like thinking of what people can actually do, like, you know, your disguise where no one can find you. Do you know what I'm saying? Kind of that stealth kind of mode as a person. So it's like, I mean, it's more, I'm really aware that it's like, you know, there is a history of it behind it. That's what I'm really aware about, of what ninjas are and the many different weapons. And it's more detailed than what people really talk about, because kids, especially little boys, they think ninjas are cool and, you know, Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe and all these different things. I said, I got to get a ninja costume myself, just for the hell of it. Just a shilling in chucks. I just always wanted a ninja costume because I always wanted to be Snake Eyes, not Storm Shadow. I wanted to, you know, I don't want to play with Barbies. I wanted to be a ninja. I wanted to be on G.I. Joe. I wanted to be a ninja. I wanted to be like Snake Eyes' sister or something like that, and get a pink ninja uniform. I know that sounds crazy, but like pink camouflage or something like that. But, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, I was in a G.I. Joe parody called G.I. Bob on the Bob Show.
Wait a minute, I think I've seen that.
Did you see that? Yeah.
What did you play?
I played, you know who I played? I played myself, but I also did a joke about the original G.I. Joe. Remember the one that they used to have back in the 60s and the 70s, the 12-inch G.I. Joe with
yeah.
the beard? It was just one
yeah.
guy. G.I. Joe was just one guy named Joe, G.I. Joe. And I kind of put on a fake beard and turned around and said I was the original G.I. Joe, you know, in with Storm Shadow and all these other ones and Beachhead and everything. And but it was fun. It was www.thebobshow.net. You can go on there and see.
Yeah, you guys, you were missing Snake Eyes. They had everyone but Snake Eyes. They had Storm Shadow. I was watching. I was like, they have no Snake Eyes or, like, a takeoff of Snake Eyes. They're going, that's part of the coolness of G.I. Joe because they have ninjas. And I'm
right.
just like, oh,
yeah.
man, there's no
Beachhead
Snake Eyes.
Kinda, right. No, it was, and it was awesome. We had to have a bad, you know, we did have Storm Shadow played by Michael Z. Beachhead by Bill McLean, and he instead of Snake Eyes we had Beachhead, and he's kind of like a ninja because he's, you know, he wears the mask over his face, you can't see, and he wears the goggles and all the camouflage and everything, and he was the main hero on that. So we thought it would be overkill to have Snake Eyes and Beachhead. So
you have to have Snake Eyes. I'm sorry, but I'll get to the point. G.I. Joe, man, if you don't have Snake Eyes, oh, man, that's just like, he's the coolest Joe. He's the best
right.
Joe out of the whole
right.
because he can kick everybody's butt. You know, it's something
yeah.
that you just got to love a ninja. I mean, he was dressed all in black, but he was a good guy. And
right.
the thing that worked for Bill is also, you know, was a trained martial artist.
Yes.
So he has that experience, and he actually is doing a zombie film as we speak. He's been doing on that. And
that's right, How to Kill a Zombie.
Yeah, and I couldn't be in the film. I think he wanted to be in the film, but I'm so involved with another one with Falcare, where I'm actually,
right.
you know, speaking of dreams, it's like kind of sitting there like thinking back when I was a little girl. You know, I watched all the really cool shows, you know, the boy shows, but then there was Wonder Woman, and I sat in
yeah.
front of it, and every little girl wanted to be Wonder Woman. Little did I know in my adulthood, I'm playing a type of Wonder Woman in this film, where we're taking horseback riding lessons, and, I mean, just doing this, and we're going to have to train, and we're doing actually some of my scenes now. Yeah, so we've been taking horseback riding lessons, and let me say my butt has been a little sore. So I don't know if I'm doing another lesson on Friday or not, but it's kind of amazing because I never thought I would do all these things, and we're, like, around the same age. In October, I'm going to turn 42, and I don't believe that, you know, because of my age, you know, I shouldn't give up on my dreams, because people get to a certain age, and they think that they have to stop doing. It's like, of course you've got to grow up, but it's like if you're paying your own bills and doing what you got to do, you know, why can't you in your spare time do your dreams?
You can. Yeah.
And it's something where you have to get the people that tell you you can't do something, get away from them, and get away from the negative people that, you know, suck your energy dry like vampires. And I just want to read this thing. I got off of Facebook. It was by this girl, Mary Christina Brown, on this other guy that I want to have as a guest. His name is Ben Ramsey. He was the director of Blood and Bone. And that starred Michael J. White. And, you know, from time to time, I speak to Ben on the internet, and I want to have him on the show down the road. But this is a really cool picture. It has a Wu-Tang. I don't know if you know who Wu-Tang is, but they have their symbol and on the left side. And on the right side, it shows Bruce Lee in his yellow costume. And I think it says something. It says Wu-Tang underneath. It says, do not chase people. Be you and do your own thing and work hard. The right people who belong in your life will come to you and stay. And I think that was so cool. And I, like, you know, people share things back and forth. And it was like this really pretty girl. And I think she's Asian. Her name's Mary Christina Brown. She's absolutely, like, I checked out some of her photos. I didn't friend her, but I think she's actually gorgeous. And I think she's an actress or model or something. And she shared this. And I was, like, just blown away by it. And I'm going, that's something really cool. I should actually put that in my in one of my photo albums and save that. So it's something, when people do stuff like that, it gets my attention because I go, wow, that's just a really cool saying. And I think I shared it on my Facebook page. So, yeah, that was really cool. And it's just certain things that I see that I just pass along, and I try to be positive. Like,
yeah.
on my Facebook page, usually what I do is I post a lot of positive stuff. sometimes they're repeating. Yeah, so you see it, and what I'm trying to do is, like, people don't realize, and it's like I shouldn't have to explain myself with what I do. Sometimes, once in a while, I am speaking to someone on the phone, and instead of, you know, putting tons of stuff on someone else's Facebook page, it's my Facebook page. So I'm posting all this positive stuff, so I'm not, like, you know, taking over someone else's Facebook page, but doing it on mine. People see it, and then they can share it, because people, like, you know, that's what they do. They post stuff where, you know, I have to approve everything now, because people get out of hand, you know, and tag you in so many different things, and it's like, what is this stuff? Like, I have, you know, no idea, because it has nothing to do with anything that I'd be interested in.
You know, it's so much more complicated these days, I think, with Facebook and everything, and it can be very frustrating. And I try to, and I do see your the things you post on there, and they are very inspirational and things like. And I read them and I like them, and I hit the like button on them frequently because, you know, it can help out in the day. Maybe you're feeling down and you see an inspirational thing, and you're like, oh, okay, you know, she's right about that, and. You know, and I do agree with them, so it's great. But I try to stay off Facebook as much as possible, and I don't post anything on Facebook because it's not that I don't post anything on Facebook. I do once in a while, but you know, I just I think it's great to connect with people. I don't want all my private, you know, things going out there. I'm a very private person, and it's so much
private
takes away
things.
From.
I actually use Facebook to promote, like, I do my radio show, and it's, like, to talk about Jackie, my film page, and I run these fan club pages, too.
Right.
And another guy that I call one of my brothers is Jay Giannone, and I support him big time, and he's another person I want to work with. The only thing is that happens once in a while, and I have to tell people, not that I have to explain myself, is because I totally look at Jay Giannone as strictly, you know, a platonic relationship. I look at him as a brother, as another film brother, and want to work with him on a big set someday, kicking butt, you know, not doing a kissing scene with him, not doing a lovemaking scene, but I want to do a fight scene, you know, where I'm side by side with Jay. I don't know if I can be a sister in a film or something and doing an action film.
Right.
And I've had people where I've had pictures of me and him taken, like, you know, and when I posted and stuff, people or even some girls would assume that I'm either dating Jay or doing Jay, and I'm like, no, it has nothing to do with that, because I think, I don't know, whoever, you know, it's not my business about people's relationships and stuff, but I was like,
oh, that's the other thing,
yeah,
as soon as you pose with someone, they think you're in a relationship with the person,
and I'm not, and I
it's
have
like the,
to
it's
say,
it's like the newscasters,
no.
It's like you see the male and the female anchor on the news, and a lot of ignorant people think that they're married or something like that. They just work together, and they're only like, they only show up, you know, and do the news for like an hour a day, and then, you know, they don't even see each other, or they're not really even friends or hang out with each other outside of work. So, but people make that mistake all the time. You gotta learn how to draw the line between fantasy and reality, and a lot of people don't know how to do that, you know. So they think all these things are real, and these relationships that are fake are real. I think some of them really do believe that, but they are there. There's a lot of, you know, actors and everything. And if you see two actors together, even if you see them together in a movie, it doesn't mean they're going out. It doesn't mean they're, you know. But you know, it's very strange. It's a strange world of acting, because sometimes you're called upon to do things like that. We have to, you know, pretend to be romantic with someone that probably doesn't even really have any interest in you at all, and that's not really easy either. So, but I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, people can't jump to conclusions like that. It's not.
Yeah, because that's what people would think when I on my Twitter, and I posted pictures of me and him, and started writing this, and I was like, I just believe that Jay actually was very talented, and he didn't have a fan club page, so I started doing this, and people are like asking me, and I'm like, what are you talking about? It's just because I'm posting pictures, and they're like, well, it looks like you're going out with him, and I'm like, no, that's not, it has nothing to do with that. I'm just supporting him and stuff, and it was like, so, you know, now it's like, I mean, other people, I mean, there's other guys that I call bro, you know, I mean, that's what I do. They're my fan brothers, you know, my film brothers that I want to work with. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And if someone's in shape, I mean, come on now. It's like, guys can like beautiful women, why can't a woman turn around and say she likes guys that are, like, totally into, you know, that are in shape? I mean, what is wrong with that? That's totally healthy for, you know, I mean, seriously, like, I swear to God, if I ever work on set with one guy, right, there's a guy, I don't know if you ever heard him, he's a martial artist, he's like, he's my age and stuff like that, and I'm very respectful on site. I go there to work on set and not to date, and reliable, but
sure.
Not Jackie. I mean, Jackie, I'd be all excited and, you know, work on them, but this one guy, I swear to God, I think I'd lose my focus for it, and I don't know if you know who he is. His name is Michael J. White. He's African-American. He's a big, major martial artist. He's a big brick wall, and I'm like, if he ever takes his shirt off, I'm like, I think I would just, like, fall over because he's just that big, but you can't miss someone. The guy is that physically fit. You know, it should be a normal thing to be attracted to someone physically fit. It seems like guys in the industry, it's okay if they like these sexy women, but it's like if it's the other way around, it makes the woman sound like she's a snob or, like, you know, a bitch or something like that, saying stuff like, I like physically fit men. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of double standards in Hollywood standards. Like, guys can be anything in film industry, but it seems like the women in Hollywood standards, they have to be like a size zero to be considered beautiful. And it's like, that shouldn't be that way. And I know a lot of people are trying to break that thing to show that there's many different type of women, or it's like they're going from being extreme thin or they're overweight. And it's like, what about the other women where I want to get a little bit more muscle? Like,
right.
I don't count if I'm more athletic. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, is there only two type of women?
No, it goes for both men and women. I think the same thing applies, you know. You just, when you're watching a movie, when you're watching TV, those are the beautiful people. I mean, those are the ones that are, you know, they're the handsome, good-looking ones who are in shape and physically, and that's fine, too, but it's not real life. I mean, you know, everyone's different. Women should not have to live up to this model, the standard and everything. And, you know, women and men come in all different shapes and sizes. And we should, you know, and the same thing applies to men, too. We're not getting, you know, I never had that problem, Shelley. But, you know, I mean, for just body types, I mean, you know, the lead guy is not going to be, you know, a schlubby, overweight,
Oh, no. I disagree with that because I'll tell you one thing right now. Because it's like, no, the TV show, there's a lot of shows that are out there that they show the guys are overweight and the girls are pretty. And it's kind of like if you look at, a couple of them like The Sopranos.
Yeah.
And they have these girls that are on there. I mean, what's his, Kevin James?
Right.
And, like, I mean, they have, like, these women that are, you know, really pretty. I mean, all these TV shows, you show
sure.
The guys are overweight, and they're, like, really pretty women. And it's like, when do they show, like, the other way around? Do you understand? It's still a man's world. And this is what I'm trying to show and overcome where women, you know, another thing, too, is what I will never do, and I've turned down roles, and people are like, how can you be so picky? I am not going to do the nudity roles, I don't have to take my clothes off, and I'm not going to do the kissing scenes. And people used to tell me, well, you're going to limit yourself as an actress. I go, well, no, not really, because I would probably do a role that would almost get me killed. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, so, I mean,
yeah.
You're going to tell me, I mean, wouldn't that, to me, that's kind of like, well, the ones that just want to do the kissing scenes and the nudity, to me, that's kind of, they're limiting their abilities because they don't want to do stunts or fights. So that goes both ways. Do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like women. You know what I'm saying? It's like when women, I mean, the way they look at it in Hollywood, women go through so much things that they starve themselves. I mean, I know men have, you know, issues too, but if you really think about it, what women do themselves, the plastic surgery, the breast implants, you're telling me all this stuff, everything they do to modify their body so they look perfect.
They don't have to.
You know,
me.
I know that's you, but that's not Hollywood. You know what I'm going to say? We're not Hollywood. We're
right.
Real. We
right.
Like, for me, I won't get plastic surgery or anything. I'm going to work out more to stay physically fit for the rest of my life. Why should I be someone at the age 42, think my life is half over when it's half begun? Because I'm not going to be one of these people that are going to grow old in a rocking chair and just, like, let life pass me by. Every opportunity I get, I'm taking. You know, I'm going to work hard for it. I don't mind that. I know I'll get there. And believe me, I think you understand, too. is doing the acting role and doing the stunts and the fights, that's tremendous, like 10 times more amount of work than someone just sitting there taking their clothes off. Do you know what I'm saying? Anybody can sit there and take their clothes off. I mean, I love my body, but I don't want to do that. Even like, do you know what I'm saying? It's like to each their own, whatever people want to do, but why should I have to do what other women are doing? Why should I have to limit myself and just say, okay, I'm going to do what everybody does? Because if you really think about it, Ron, if there's so many beautiful people out there, and everybody makes them so beautiful through plastic surgery, and they have all these millions of people going off the parts, how are you going to differentiate yourself from the next beautiful person? Do you know what I'm saying? If you're getting all these things done, how do you stand out if there's millions? You might get, there might be a role where they want someone who's extremely Hollywood gorgeous, but there's so many other roles that actually stand out more than that most gorgeous person. And I've watched the quirkiest characters. Like there's a film called Maja, and it's to do with it's a Chinese game, it's an Asian game, and it's a different culture. And there's also I don't know if you've ever heard of I think it was called Kung Fu Hustle. I don't know if you've seen that, there's these two offbeat characters, and it's this landlady. When I first started watching it, I really didn't like her character, but she had rollers on and she was smoking a cigarette, and she had this really skinny husband. And I guess they were just this man and a woman. They work in many, you know, films together, and it's subtitled and stuff, and it's so funny, and she's such a great character that she ended up being my favorite. I think the actor that was known in Kung Fu Hustle, I think it's Stephen Chow, but the film itself, there's characters that are so offbeat that I end up loving more than the ones that are supposed to be model-looking and stuff, and those are the ones that stand out to me and that I don't forget. So it's kind of like, I mean, that's what I think. If you're beautiful and stuff like that, I mean, I guess maybe it's better to be imperfect because it's like then you're not all constantly worried about what you look, that type of beauty. And I think if you work out more, I think that's probably a good thing, you know, and not just worried about getting the plastic surgery.
No. To be healthy is definitely the best route to go. And, that's what I find. I find sexy what's on the inside of a person. And if I'm a fan of someone, even someone I see, it's not all only because, you know, I find that woman hot or sexy as an actress. Probably in most cases not. I'm going to find something that I like about their personality, and that's few and far between. I'm not a big fan of many things nowadays because it is all geared that way. And I'm sure it's got to be a quandary for an actress who is, you know, marketing her good looks, because she's going to get inundated with offers for her to strip in movies because that's why they do it, is because they dangle all this extra money out there for them, and they're going to say, okay, well, it's not that I don't have a problem with my body. I worked hard on maintaining a healthy body, and then they show it off. So, you know, but I don't know. But, there's also the question of, you know, how much is too much? And I think they just go for gratuitous. If it's integral and then there's nothing, and there can be beautiful moments and just, you know, as part of a story, I have nothing against it. And I have nothing against, because I'm a writer, I'd have nothing against writing, you know, something that had that in it. In moderation. But to use that as a way to exploit women or to make objectify women and sexual objects, that's wrong, and that's what's done, and no one seems to be caring really about the next generation or the kids who are impressionable, who are watching all these adult-themed oriented things, because no one is saying, it almost seems like everything is geared towards adults now, everything, and there's not, you know, we live, and there's so many kids, and they're seeing all this, and I find I'm opposed to it, you know, but like, I'm not running Hollywood, but other people are in charge of that, and they're making those decisions. But there is a lot of violence out there, and there is a lot of sex, and it's too much, and it's too much, and it shouldn't be. But kids see it, you know, and that's we have to pull back too. So, you know, so I hopefully if I can write something, it's going to be, I know that I have a responsibility to set a good example, really.
Well, the thing is, I'm glad that you brought up that stuff because there's a couple things I always come back with. And with what you're saying, it's like, well, there's two things because it's like people don't understand when they think martial arts, it's all about violence. But actually, the people that play in those action films, you know, like the martial arts films that I love that are really like just really bring it. It's in real life, the martial artists, they're just acting, and it's not real violence. Like out there in real life, it's all acting. And the other thing, too, is, you know, with what you're saying is how they're being objectified, and you should read about, like, learn stuff about one of my brothers, the Horror Z. And I think my last half hour, I'm going to bring up some of this stuff there, a few other things. So is there something, before I actually, you know, let you go, is there anything else that I can... you'd want to talk about, like any other projects or anything?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I'm looking for other projects and, you know, as an actor on the scene. And, but, you know, frequently, you know, I think to myself, if it's something I want to do, I'm gonna make sure that I do it no matter what. Even if someone, you know, doesn't have the idea or whatever, I'm going to beat them to the punch, and I'm just going to come out and say, hey, listen, I'm just sitting here. I need to be out there doing something, and I'm going to just create something myself. And I'm going to, put myself on the map by, you know, producing and being active in the community, in the film community, in the film world. And I also like to make people laugh and do comedy. And that's, you know, laughter is the best medicine. And just being silly and goofy, that's what I'm good at. I like making people laugh. And I easily, you know, do it. So hopefully you'll be seeing more of me, you know, locally in the scene and on the horizon. So I'm gonna keep trying to produce my own things. And you might see me pop up in other people's productions here and there, and I'm having fun probably doing it. And I can't wait to work with you, Shelley. It's been a pleasure being on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait for all the costume and stuff. I've had so much experience with working with latex. Believe me, it's gonna be a ball. It's gonna be like total hilarity, and you know, I just hope that chemistry is gonna really be caught on film. And I thank you so much for being on a guest on my show, Robert.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Shelley. It's been a pleasure, and have a great summer, everyone. Okay.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, we'll see.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Robert Harris, and you can actually find him on Facebook, or you can actually network him through my page, and I can direct you to him. I'd like to take a little bit of a break. First, I'm going to play for my brother Crosby Tatum, a song where I was actually in the video for Feel by Laz and Cass of Triceptive Studios. So let me play that. Here we go.
Yeah, last rip, Cata B, Miss Smith and NV, for little 9 y'all, yeah, check this out, yeah, Triceptus Studios, ha, check it, yeah, yeah. Yo, chillin' in the club, toastin' it up, having some fun, just enjoying the love. I saw you walking by, looking all upset. That was a cue for me, just the end of the set. To take you from your low, bring you to your high. Tell you positive things like how you so fly. After the club, meet me at the ride. We'll go to the beach, count the stars in the sky. In the meantime, tell me about your 9. You're the finest thing that's dressing all wide. Clothes you got on is a major turn on. Me looking at your mind is an instant all on. Yeah, God, it's the way how you touching me, sending me a vibe right through my body. You're so attractive and I'm so addictive. Yeah, that's something different, I'm dying to get with it.
Ooh, I like the way you always touching on me. Ooh, I like the way you put yours on my body. Ooh, I like the way you always on my mind. Ooh, I like the way how you do it every time. Ooh, ha, ha, ooh, ha, ha, ooh, ha. You just make me feel. Ooh, ha, ha, ooh, ha, ha, ooh, ha. You just make me feel.
That's a problem.
prime time player. Used to chew girls up like now and later. Used to have 10 shorties all up in the jazz. Used to bang them all out like they never really had. I was going buck wild, I really didn't care. Had the blinged up loops plus the lined up hair. So fresh, so clean, y'all can help to stare. Living like Liberace with rockets to spare. Till I saw you, you opened up my eyes. The way you showed me love, it was definitely a surprise. Never ever met a girl who kept it so right. Never ever met a girl who matched my left or right. Now it's just me and you, let's play one on one. What we playing for, she said, I said for your heart. Accept the invitation, let's have some fun. From the nighttime sky to the early morning sunlight.
How can I approach you on this? You make my whole heart to fit. When you near me, I get chills. Without you around, I'm going ill. I'd probably die if you were mine. Fuck you for murder, you're a crime. Looking in your eyes, I feel I'm fine. Let's do this now, don't waste no time. Ooh, ah, ha, ha, ooh, ah, ha, ha, ooh, ah. You just make me feel.
Surprise, and you can check him out. Actually, go to his Facebook, and there's a website, and you can actually donate to actually the cause to for the film. And I mentioned about it in the beginning of the show. And I like to bring up either I'm talking about Jackie Chan or about a film that I'm actually involved in. One of the films that I'm involved in is called Falcare. And Falcare is a fantasy action film about four women chosen to become the legendary Valkyrie in order to save humanity from an alien race. So we are now in the middle of doing a couple of my scenes, which last Saturday I just really was totally blown away, because when you actually grow up as a kid, like myself, I've always loved the action. You know, I loved Wonder Woman, and every little girl that I knew that watched the Wonder Woman show with Linda Carter, we used to sit in front of the show and pretend we wanted to be Wonder Woman. Now, many years later, little did I dream that I would be playing a Wonder Woman in a film called Falcare. And it's about four women that are whisked away, you know, to save mankind, humankind. And, you know, it's kind of amazing that when we were doing the scene, it's kind of like a before kind of scene with my character. And it's just kind of like, you know, it's just a Jackie Chan kind of little feel to it. So I'm, like, very honored to do this. And actually Saturday I'll be doing another part of my scene on Saturday, so I'm just, like, wicked excited. So as you can see, I'm either doing the radio show, working, filming scenes, or, you know, doing some writing on my cuff pages. So I'm always doing things. I'm always busy, very busy, and I feel blessed because things are coming to me and working to things. Now, with the Falcare fundraiser, what I'm going to bring up and read something off the Falcare site, I'm going to bring this up, and what they also do is, you know, it's a fundraiser, too, and they're looking for people to donate money. And for Falcare, it says here, we need to raise $35,000 to complete Falcare. What it's for, we need different camera equipment and better screening equipment. We've gone as far as we can go without your help. Those of you that know Uhura, Zecora, Deliza, know that he has the ability to take a little and to stretch it to its limit, and he has, but now he needs help. We're asking for funds so that we can do a beautiful film to present to you. If even 100 of you gave 150, that would help us considerably. If there are companies out there that would be willing to sponsor our project, we will find a way to feature you, your product, or your name in Falcare. We would do it in an artistic way so that it fits within the grand scheme of the movie. We are doing the best that we can with no money, but we have hit a wall. We do not need millions, although that we graciously accept it, but to fulfill the vision of Falcare, we need a little. All of you that give will receive gifts. It may be on Walk on Roll in the movie. We thank you in advance for your consideration and hope that you will be generous. And you can go to the Falcare fundraiser, Falcare, F as in Frank, A as in Apple, L, C as in Cat, YYR as in Robert. So it's Falcare fundraiser, and you can go fundraiser.com. And you can actually go to the website www.falcaremovie.com for updates and production photos and like us on Facebook. The other thing, too, I actually got to sit up on top of a horse named Cowboy. And the horse itself was actually saved from a meat train. So it's something where the animals that are actually part of the film, different horses, they were actually saved and rescued. And even, I think, on the horses that were taking horseback riding lessons, I think a couple of them there at that place, I think it's Hot Horses where we actually are taking a lesson in Buxton, Maine, you know, to train. And I just cannot wait to see us in full costume on the horses. Us four women, you know, we're all different. And we're just going to blend. And I want to play a song by Ahura, Zecora DeLisa. And if you want to know, like, the type of film, it's actually, you know, it's that epic feel to it. And if you listen to the song, it's called Battle Song. It's an opera by Pisces Projects. Forgive me, I have trouble pronouncing words, so forgive me. I'm going to have to learn to speak a little bit better when pronouncing things. But this is Ahura, Zecora DeLisa and his wife, Tanari. And if you actually listen to the song, it's called Battle Song, and you will get a feel for what type of film is epic. So let me just play this song. Here we go. Once again, that was Battle Song, Pisces Projects. And it's with my brother, Ahura Zakor Deliza, and his lovely, beautiful wife, Sonari. And that is the music. That is the type of music that will be in the film Valkyr. So if you can hear that it's an epic battle song, you can just picture the type of film that the mastermind, Ahura, a lot of people call him Z because it is, it's hard for people to pronounce his name, so everyone calls him Z. And you can feel in that type of song, in battle song, the type of film that he's going for. He's not going to go for a B-rated film. He's been working so hard, and, you know, he runs a school, and they even actually had hula classes today outside the school with, I think, a special camp called Strive. So he does so many things. And this is the type of man that you really would want to help out in a film, because he doesn't talk about it, but Ahura has done so much. And it's just, like, amazing that, you know, I just can't believe that there's no money tree growing in the backyard of his, of where he is, because he does so much. And he does the best he can. He also believes that no one in this world should go hungry. And, I mean, with someone like that, those are the people that you want to see that he will end up having a bigger voice in the industry. Those are the people that do matter. And to me, I have to say, if it wasn't for Ahura, I would not be sitting here on this radio show. I would not be doing the things I do in my writings. I just ended up making a book about a ferret called The Skeptical Ferret. All these things that I'm doing. And I know I will work with Jackie Chan. And no one can tell me no, because my dream, and I've gotten away from the most negative people, and I did realize when I was around the negative people, I was so sick all the time. My health has improved so much because I got away from the negative people. And the most smart, positive people keep coming into my life, into my circle. And that's why I know my dream is going to come true. I work all the time, and I've worked every single day for 7 years. Even when I have a day off from my full-time job that helps to pay the bills, well, let me just say, I still have to network and talk and do other things just to prepare me for the bigger picture. And I know it will happen, and no one can change my mind, because I know I'll work with Jackie Chan. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it, but I will work with him. And, you know, no one's going to stop me. And I don't care about the naysayers or the haters and stuff. They can take a flying leap off from Pierre for as far as I'm concerned. I could care less what anybody thinks, because who is anybody to say anything to Jackie Chan? Jackie Chan is his own man. You can't tell Jackie Chan no, he is, because he's his own boss. He has his own companies. If Jackie Chan ever invited me to work with him, of course I'm going to go. What am I going to say no to Jackie Chan? I mean, come on now. That's the person who I'm working towards to work with, and I'm working very hard. And once again, I am so blessed because I get up every day, and I'm blessed because I get to do what I want in my life, and I'm not stuck. You know, I don't have to do what other people do and just be depressed about living this, you know, mediocre type of life. A lot of people, they get to be my age, they're depressed because it's like, you know, they only just exist. And I know with my life, I don't have to just exist. I can do my dreams and do everything that I've ever wanted to do. You know why? Because I can. That's the thing, too. If anybody's listening to this show and they have a dream, just remember, no matter how little or how big it is, do not let the small minds out there tell you that you can't do something, because you can. You know, you have your own 2 feet. You can get up and walk away. You can find the people that are going to help you. You find the teachers. You find people in the entertainment business. The entertainment business, there are good people out there. I can't tell you who you're going to work with. You just have to find those people. You just have to have that feeling in your heart. If you're an underdog, if you're a creative person, if you're a rocky type of character, you already know what the, happens to the underdog at the end of all films. Their dreams come true. And that's definitely going to happen for me. My fairy tale is different than most. I'm not going to be Cinderella with the glass slipper. I'm going to be the action girl that actually gets to work with Jackie Chan. And it doesn't matter what anybody says, because I will. And once again, before I end the show, I am going to play the song The Fighter by one of my nephews. It's Kodiak and his brother Sacrifice. And let me just say, this song, The Fighter, it was originally supposed to be for the film The Fighter with Marky Mark. But I guess maybe it wasn't good enough for that film, but you know what? The song The Fighter is going to be in my film, The Dishwasher, which is dedicated to Jackie Chan to thank him for all the happiness that he's given throughout the whole world, and that's why I'm doing my film. Now, maybe my film, The Dishwasher, isn't going to be the biggest Hollywood blockbuster. It's a short film, but it's going to be what's in my heart, because I'm an underdog too. And I am going to get my film, The Dishwasher, to Jackie Chan one way or the other. The day I talk to Jackie Chan and sit down, that's going to be my own success. It's not all about money. It's about making my dream come true. And the day I sit next to Jackie Chan, I'm going to tell him everything I've done to get to where I am, to shake his hand or bow in front of him to thank him. Now, I don't know. I could sit and cry as a release, you know, just that if Jackie was standing in front of me. I know he's just a human being, but he's someone I look up to, and a lot of people, maybe they don't understand it, but if you look on the Real Jackie Chan's Facebook page, there's over 27 million people on his Facebook page. And if there's over 27 million people that like Jackie Chan, then I know I'm more normal than people who said I wasn't normal to like Jackie Chan in the first place, and that I didn't like martial arts, like, you know, they didn't understand about martial arts, why I love it. It's a way of life. Martial arts is not about the old, you know, the flow and of, like, kicking someone's butt. It's being well-rounded. It's to do with your heart, your mind, and your spirit. And that's what it's about, because we're all connected, each one of us, to, like, every living thing in this world. That's what it is. Martial arts is a way of life. And speaking of fighting stuff, once again, I'm closing the show with the song The Fighter. Here we go.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettled, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the breaks ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb on my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Meet them head to head, I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose.
stop, no.